everyone, and welcome to the Season 10 finale of Setting the Tone, an ER Retrospective, the show where we do a chronological breakdown of every episode of our favorite TV medical drama. My name is Elizabeth, and Lauren is unfortunately out again. She is dealing with kidney stones and associated symptoms, so we wish her well, and hopefully she'll be back for the wrap-up next week. But with me, as always, though, is Daniel.
Hey.
It's just, hey. It's been a downer week. All right, today we'll be discussing Season 10, Episode 22, though, which is titled Drive. The episode aired on May 13th, 2004. Daniel, what was going on that week 20 years ago?
Oh, boy. Future reality TV star Kate Gosselin gives birth to sextuplets. First, the subject of a pair of Discovery Health documentaries. The six children, is it six or so? Yeah.
Six.
Because
it's John and Kate plus eight,
exactly.
So it's
okay,
just
yeah.
two pair of twins and then sextuplets.
Right. The six children plus her two older ones would go on to star in the smash hit TLC reality show John and Kate plus eight, later known as Kate plus eight after the couple divorced. Show ran for 11 seasons and 174 episodes. You could almost call this a social experiment because it is.
I mean, pretty much.
It's like, what do you do if you put an entire family into like a pressure cooker environment and how?
And also, what like if you wanted to scientifically craft the perfect Karen?
Oh yeah, I think this was the origin of the Karen hairstyle. I think is.
Oh yeah,
you could find its source material in Kate Gosselin's hair, and it's one of those. It's one of those cases where, like, the only redeemable people in this entire situation are the children. Like, everyone, like, the producers of the show, like, both parents, like, everyone involved in this is a terrible person. And now that these kids are, certainly the two older ones, and I think the children, well, yeah, the children are going to be, the younger ones, they're into adulthood now, young adulthood. So like we're starting to see kind of the fallout of all of this kind of play itself out now, and it is fucked up. It's not great.
Speaking of fucked up,
the documentary Super Size Me, in which independent filmmaker Morgan Spurlock attempts to eat nothing but food from McDonald's for 1 month, is released. Though Spurlock concluded his experiment with a myriad of negative health effects, many of the movie's conclusions have since been debunked. The main criticisms have been centered around Spurlock's lack of exercise throughout the month, his unwillingness to release his food log, and failing to disclose his history of alcohol abuse. Several similar experiments were later undertaken, resulting in far less negative effects when combined with a basic exercise routine and a moderation of the food intake.
I mean, we watched this in health class.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's where I first saw it.
Between health class, college, and just kind of my own, you know, being an exercise science major and like my just kind of my own consumption of materials, you know, related to fitness, exercise, wellness, that kind of stuff, I've probably watched that documentary half a dozen times at least. Like,
yeah, over the years, I probably have too.
It was something almost that was to be studied, you know, to be. Not just watched and enjoyed or watched and absorbed, but like it was, we meticulously picked that movie apart. And yeah, I mean, I get the spirit of what he was trying to do. And, you know, it did lead to some positive change, you know, like McDonald's kind of scaled back a lot of their supersize offerings. Which
yeah, they really don't have a supersize option anymore.
Right. So they scaled back some of that stuff as a direct result. But certainly the methodology was a little flawed and a little little bit sensationalized for the sake of entertainment.
Because one of the big conclusions was his liver was super fucked up. And guess what? If you have a history of alcohol abuse, your liver's going to be more susceptible to being fucked up.
Right, yeah. Which, you know, again, not to say that those things can't happen, but the degree to which they were happening for him was definitely compounded by his other lifestyle factors. So, you know. But yeah, little common sense in order. Just don't eat McDonald's every single day for every single meal for any length of time. But you know, in moderation, just like anything else, it's fine. Over at the box office, though, Van Helsing, starring Hugh Jackman and Kate Beckinsale, debuts and takes the box office crown. The only thing about that movie that I know, or the only reference or attachment I have to it, is in the later seasons of The Sopranos when. AJ is coming of age and he grows his hair out really long. All the other mobsters start calling him Van Helsing. and
I know the poster. I've never seen the movie though.
Yeah, it's one of those ones I think that is it has its fans. It has its ardent supporters, but not a classic by any means.
Gotcha.
And Yeah by Usher featuring Ludacris and Lil Jon is still the number one song. As for what else is on this evening or that evening, it's another week, another finale, as this week we are saying goodbye to Frasier for now, since the show has since been rebooted
to wide disapproval.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good to just let things lie.
Because it's literally only him.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody else wanted to be a part of it, or was already, you know, dead. But yeah, we said goodbye to Friends last week. This week, we're saying goodbye to Frasier, a show that took over the mantle for a while. Anyway, took over the mantle of Seinfeld in that pre-ER 9:30 time slot, and did it to great effect. I mean, this is, you know, it's a character in a show that I've never been that attached to. I know this is much more Lauren's wheelhouse.
Oh yeah, this is one of Lauren's favorite TV shows of all time.
Yeah, but I never had that much of an attachment to it. But it is remarkable that he was able to play that character for that long, and you know, be that. It's definitely in the conversation, if not, you know, unquestionably the best spinoff. Maybe Better Call Saul has a argument.
Maybe
for
one
that
of the most successful spinoffs, yeah. Probably in terms of like viewership and.
Right.
Money drawn in.
I think the hallmark of any good spinoff is that a segment of your audience may not even know that the character started on a different show. And
yeah.
That's definitely what Frasier achieved. So just like last week, at the 8 p.m. Hour, Frasier does an hour-long kind of retrospective episode, a clip show probably of sorts, you know, where they were looking back on the show that was titled Analyzing the Laughter. And at the 9 o'clock hour, the full hour, parts one and two of the series finale, Good Night Seattle, which pulled in a whopping 33.7 million viewers, about 23, almost 24 of which ER will hang on to at 10 o'clock. So, you know, not quite the behemoth like 54, 55 million that Friends pulled in last week, but nothing to sneeze at either. You know, 34 million is not too bad. So I wish Lauren were here. I wish she were able to tell me if this was a satisfactory ending at the time. You know, I know that a lot of people have mixed feelings on the reboot and whether they should have brought it back at all. But it would be interesting to know if it was well regarded at the time. Because, like I said,
I made scrambled eggs for dinner. So
hey, there you go.
I forgot to toss salad though. Sorry.
But as I said, 23.8 million viewers stuck around at 10 for the season finale here of ER, directed by Jonathan Kaplan, doing his 35th out of 40. He's been all over season 10, including episodes Abby Normal, Impulse Control, Missing, Out of Africa, and Now What? And written by Dee Johnson, doing her 15th out of 19. Previous ones of hers from this season include Blood Relations, Death and Taxes, and Shifts Happen. And we, much like Lauren, we've got no Susan this week joining us for the season finale. You know, both of them had very legitimate excuses for missing out.
All right, but our previously on this week is brought to us by Carter, and we open. Abby's doing a nursing shift because she hasn't gotten her board results yet, so that's a little, you know,
a little concerning.
Yeah, a little concerning. Thank you. And Neela is doing her final prep for her move to Michigan. Yay! I'm saying yay on behalf of Lauren, but she's going to be going up to University of Michigan and not Michigan State, so boo. Go green.
I will say going into this episode that this was a season finale that I had very little memory of. Concretely. I mean, I knew the cliffhanger.
Yeah, I would say I remember the very end. I don't really remember much. For some reason, I thought this happened like next season or something. I don't know why I thought that. Even with her graduating last episode,
right? Yeah, it was like it does feel like a lot of the stuff, particularly the Neela stuff. I guess you know it feels more beginning of a season type stuff than it does end of a season type stuff. And short of the cliffhanger, not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but short of the cliffhanger, this is pretty ho hum. By finale standards, like this is a very mundane, very by the numbers kind of finale, and we will get into kind of the this is one of those transitional type moments in the show where we are going to be kind of saying goodbye to a format and a style and moving on to something different as we move into next season as things really start to change. I mean, it hit me the other day that next season is our last full season with Carter. Like, we are about to jettison the very last vestige of the original cast.
But come on, it's the Archie redemption arc starting next season.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of stuff to look forward to, but it's just, you know, it's emblematic both in terms of the faces on the screen, but also the way that they're telling stories and the way things are presented. This episode is kind of this weird little, like, merging of the two before we go fully in the other direction next season. But we start out with Pratt out in the ambulance bay with a swanky new ride. I believe it's a Cadillac or Chrysler or something. It's a fancy car, and it goes fast, and it goes cargo vroom. he's showing it off to Malik, Neela, and Abby. Malik is loving it, but Neela and Abby couldn't care less. While they're out there, an ambulance drops off a jaundiced 75-year-old with end-stage colon cancer. He doesn't have a primary care doc or an oncologist. We later find out this gentleman's name is Mr. Gould, played by actor Billy Macy, not to be confused with William H. Macy. This is cousin Billy. Billy Macy, who appeared in stuff like The Jerk, Maude, and Analyze This, and as you might imagine from his age in this episode, did pass away in 2019.
I miss William H. Macy every single day.
Well, you know, he'll be back.
In the show, he's still alive.
Right. He'll be back before you know it. And yeah, Mr. Gould, like I said, a kind of a ho-hum episode, but I do enjoy his little through line.
I wish they would have done a little bit more with it.
Yeah.
Like, well, the heartwarming part of it. But.
Right. It feels very echoey of earlier seasons, and I think that's what I enjoy about it. But we'll get into more with Mr. Gould as we go along here. But we cut over to Luca on this is a Chicago location shot, you think?
It looks like it. I wasn't paying particular attention.
Yeah, I suppose now as I'm saying it out loud now, it could be an LA shoot. Like, there's nothing definitive, you know, placing it in Chicago proper. So it could just be a dressed up LA shoot, but Luca pulls over on some random street to help a stranded motorist who's having car troubles, TM. Like, it's non-specific car trouble.
The hood is up on the car and the woman is flustered.
Right. And so as they're trying to get jumper cables and, like, trying to get stuff sorted out, some impatient jackass pulls into a construction lane and rear ends the truck behind her, which plows right into the woman right in front of Luca, pinning her legs between the cars, which is a...
pinning her legs, okay.
Yeah.
I, for some reason, at first I thought it was her torso, so then I went back and corrected that.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I could see how you could get that, you know, they are connected after all, but it's just such a gross visual.
Just Luca, like, his sunglasses are on, but, like, you can tell, like, his eyes are like, what the fuck just happened here?
Right.
He's just staring at the woman who's screaming.
And that woman is played, Linda, is played by actress Cynthia Ettinger, who appeared in stuff like Frailty, The Silence of the Lambs, and License to Wed. Apparently also appeared in way back in season one as a completely different character. I want to say, like, episode 15-ish, 14, 15, somewhere in there. I forgot, should have wrote down the actual episode, but she's been with us before, so... and her son, we also forgot to mention, her son is in the car, and he's also injured in the crash. Her son, Michael, and he's played by actors. He's played by twins, which I feel like is unusual for a child of this age to still be played by twins. Like, I know that there's limitations on how much work a single child is allowed to do, but usually when you see twins working on a part together, it's usually either like babies or like very small, like toddler age kids. It's not usually like, this kid's like 12 or 13. But he is played by twins, Dylan and Casey Borsma, and they've appeared in stuff like Drillbit Taylor, Father of the Bride Part 2, and a recurring role on the cursed TV series Seventh Heaven.
Curse TV series.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, it's just a bad show all the way around. Like, it's
that's all I thought of it.
It's just not a good show. But then, of course, there was all the unpleasantness with the main actor on that show, the guy who played the dad.
Remind me name.
I don't remember. Stephen Collins, I think, was the actor's name. But he ended up being a big old pedophile. So,
okay, moving on now.
Right. Yeah. So. Just don't watch, do not rewatch Seventh Heaven, kids. And that, of course, brings us right into the intro where we are in with bangs.
And we get out of the intro and Carter, what the fuck? Carter's working? Like,
I mean, wouldn't you under those same circumstances? Like, I would want to just go right back to work. Like, that would be my impulse. I would be like,
bury
myself in work.
Like, after my mom passed away a couple months ago, I didn't work for a month because it felt wrong in a way.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
And that's, you know, that's valid as well. I mean, I guess it's everybody's kind of processes differently, and what is soothing and comforting to one person sounds like being miserable to somebody else, you know, like it's so personal.
But everyone's offering condolences, and Carrie, a little bit of bonding between Carrie and Carter, because Carrie gets the notion of working through the emotional pain.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them have just been so sad this season.
Right, yeah. Again, but another thread that I wish they would have, like, tugged on a little bit more in this episode. Like, you could have done a little bit less of the ho-hum stuff, and, like, really, you know, if you're going to get real with it, let's get real.
But we go back to the accident site, though. Luca is calling 911, says they're at State and 14th, so presumably they're in the South Loop. Woman's son got thrown, what's his name? Michael. Yeah, got thrown into the front seat, and he's unconscious. And the impatient jackass flees the scene, leaving his car, because, you know, they won't be able to tie that back to him in any sort of way.
So more to come on the impatient jackass, which is a great alternate character name if he hadn't been.
I mean, it's what he was.
Right. But for now, we go back to the ER. The jaundiced man, Mr. Gould from earlier, is now vomiting. Insists that he isn't ready to die yet, despite I think he said they did say when they brought him in that he had a DNR as well.
Yeah, from the nursing home.
Yeah, and wants antibiotics. Chen comes in to consult and has a nice little shiner going there that is as of yet unexplained, but everybody kind of clues in on it immediately as soon as she walks in.
She's like, oh, okay.
Right. Abby asks her about it, but she kind of artfully dodges the question, which will be a recurring theme the rest of this episode, as we see Pratt seeing Chen for the first time and seeing the black eye and is concerned about her as well. But she plays it off and claims that she ran into a door in the dark and that's what caused it. So...
It happens.
Yeah, it does. Neela wants Pratt to go see Elgin before he's discharged. Pratt apparently has not had any contact with him since he was admitted and has just kind of let that one go.
Despite their... he's probably embarrassed.
A little, yeah.
Yeah.
A little. But Neela is rightfully kind of nudging him in that direction. She encourages him to help the kid out more, which he should.
Be a mentor to this young man,
right? He clearly looks up to Pratt, so but more to come on that in a bit. For now, we go back to the accident site. Fire and paramedics have arrived, and they go to extricate Linda. They basically have to cut part of the truck out of they have to like saw off part of the bumper so that they can push the truck back.
Yeah, exactly, because there's just wedged in a very specific way.
And the paramedics are trying to get Luca to first get out of the way, he's like in the car with her, like trying to, you know, check vitals.
And he's barking out the orders.
Right, barking out orders and everything. And then he wants to ride in the rig with her. But they're trying to get him to just follow them in his car. And she's like, no, I want you to stay. Which I think, I can't remember if we've mentioned or not yet at this point, but as of yet, she has not got any feeling in her legs. He's like reached down and like tried to palpate her legs several times and no sensation. So not a good sign. Never a good sign. And then back in the ER, Pratt is checking in with Elgin. He seems to be in good spirits, seems to be recovered from his condition at the end of last episode. And he wants asks Pratt if he can be their family's primary care doc. Wants to know if Pratt has an office somewhere around.
Aww.
Right, which is so, like, endearing, but also, like, sweetly naive. Like, oh honey. Like, you just want to give the kid, you just want to give the very giant kid a hug. Like, he's,
it's like, I mean, he probably gets good hugs.
Right, so. Yeah. He's a large boy. And then we see Carter briefly treating a teenager with a broken leg and clavicle. This is kind of a go nowhere, do nothing patient. It's very like blink and you miss it. It doesn't really get followed up on.
Yeah. We find out Alex never made it to school today. Steve apparently never dropped him off. Luca gets to the hospital with Linda, her kid Michael, and the impatient driver. Driver's name is Antoine. He's altered. Paramedics think he may be drunk, and he's played by...
He is played by actor Sam Sarpong, and he has appeared in stuff like No Weapon Formed Against Us, American Crime Story, and Bones. And unfortunately, Sam here did pass away in 2015. Yeah, it's not a great story, so I'll spare everyone the details. It's out there on Google if you want to look for it, but it's just, you know, nothing salacious, but just a sad story that nobody needs to be, you know, subjected to.
Anyway, but the Antoine claims he's not high or drunk and wants Pratt to, you know, help him out because, you know, they're two black guys. So, of course, Pratt's going to he's going to help him get out of the police charges. That's fine.
It's fine. Yeah, he says, come on, man, help a brother out. To which Pratt replies, you're not my brother. So is that technically like our introduction to Pratt's the mention that Pratt has a brother, which will come into play in a few seasons?
I mean, I guess if you want to.
I mean, they've
read too much into it.
They've never mentioned anything about Pratt's family up until now. So, but yeah,
with a dad like Danny Glover,
right? So. That's coming. Like, that's coming soon. Like early next season, I think. But yeah, so we'll see more with Antoine here as we go along. But for now, we go over to the trauma with Linda. Corday has come down to consult. Linda is in pretty rough shape. She's bleeding internally, and her legs are about as bad as you would imagine they would be, being crushed between two vehicles and having to be extricated. Just not good in any way. So... They need to do surgery, but she at this point I think wants to wait for her husband to get there. So we'll wait around for that, I guess. They get pulled over to Michael, who is thrashing around next door because he wants his mom and dad. Carter has a moment, TM, like has a emotional reaction when the kid is crying out for his dad. But he doesn't really get time to process it because the kid immediately kind of crashes and needs to be intubated. And again, this is all stuff that, like, I get the impulse to not want to, like, beat the drum of how much of a downer last week's episode was. Like, they want to end the season on a little bit more of an uplifting note, even if the cliffhanger, you know,
is... I was gonna say, the cliffhanger is not uplifting.
No, but, like... I think I understand what they're trying to do here. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Like, they're trying to have the big dramatic moment to close the season while still retaining some of that, like, wistfulness of the early season finales where, you know, like, I'm thinking more of like seasons 1, 2, 3, where, you know, it was always about Carter's development and his advancement, you know, in stuff. That was always the theme of those season finales. And so you would have these like big uplifting upswing moments, and they get a little bit into that this episode while also still wanting to have that, like, they're clearly craving that hit of drama, you know, that they got the last few seasons with, you know, the lockdown stuff and you know, just the big dramatic reveal in Africa. Like, they're clearly crafting episodes around moments rather than emotions. So, you know, like I said, trying to have their cake and eat it too.
But we go back to Antoine. He tested positive for opiates and sobered right the fuck up with Narcan. But he still doesn't seem to grasp the amount of trouble that he's in, as he's like, okay, I'm just gonna leave. Okay, bye.
I can go now, right?
Like, what's your plan, sir?
Nothing to see here.
They presumably have your registration information. They presumably have your address. They at least know your name.
Right. They've got your blood.
Yeah. Like, it's like, where are you going to go? What's your plan? I don't get this. But I mean, you know, if I was facing charges for basically I don't know what the exact charge. Where's Jake when you need him? I don't know what the exact charge would be. But anyway, but he's in a lot of trouble. It happens when you necessitate an amputation for two of a woman's legs. But nice carry burn here. I forgot to write it down because I am not Lorne and I don't pull quotes.
Yeah, I do remember it being a nice little burn there as she leaves the room. And I want to say like. He would at least certainly be looking at all the usual, you know, reckless driving and
vehicular, attempted vehicular manslaughter.
Right.
Something like that.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I think probably.
Assault with a deadly weapon.
Right.
Maybe.
There's quite a few things I think they could charge him with at this point. But I'm sure Jake is screaming into his headphones right now about all the things we're getting wrong. But for now, we go back over to Michael and his trauma. Carter needs to do a chest tube on Michael and is clearly not himself, like clearly not not emotionally ready to be back in these situations yet.
Yeah. He's very tense. He's very like he's taking charge, but not in like a good way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Not in a functional, effective sort of way. He's just doing it because that's what he's supposed to do, he thinks.
Yeah, you know? It's like a fuck you, let's do this.
Right.
Like, instead of like a come on guys, let's do this type of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he's just trying to muscle his way through the grief and the situation. Yeah, it's not working out great for him or Michael. Carrie offers to help when things seem to be stalling, but she's quickly reminded by Frank that she's going to be late for her court date. So she has to try to duck out, leaving Carter to fend for himself here. But on her way out, she does, you know, stop in with Chen and try to, you know, encourage her to go over there and help Carter because he's clearly struggling. And then we get a brief shot of Neela driving down the highway, flipping through radio stations on her way, presumably up to Ann Arbor. I'm a little annoyed, given the time frame and everything, that we didn't get a little, like, life is a highway needle drop here. Like, this is mid-2000s. Like, I guess,
we get her on the side of the highway smoking a cigarette later. It's like,
I get,
who knew she smoked?
I guess the Office episode that really made a joke out of that is still a couple of years off at this point. But you know, it's just such a like meme to me at this point now. Anytime somebody's on a road trip, that song has to come on.
See, whereas my mind immediately when I think road trip, my mind immediately goes to Please Don't Destroy on Saturday Night Live. They have a really good spoof on road trip stuff. Let's go back to the ER though. Michael's lung is down again, and Chen is helping out. Michael's in VTAC. Carter does a needle decompression, though, to get his heart going again, but his heart is beating strong, but he is far from out of the woods. Go over to Mr. Gould?
Gould,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, Mr. Gould wants his own room. He was a teacher for 37 years, and as he's kind of going on about stuff like that, Linda's husband shows up, who is played by...
Actor Larry Sullivan, who appears in stuff like Will and Grace, Big Little Lies, and Modern Family. He's got a whopping 106 credits to his name, making him the high watermark actor for this episode. Mr. Gould is in a dark place emotionally here, as you might imagine. Like, he's feeling very sorry about himself, sorry for himself, and a lot of despair over his current situation, and just... It's a tough watch. And he's also, we get a little like glimpse into his, how dire his situation is here, because he mentions to Abby that he thinks that he has at best like 3 days to a week left at this point. So he's not doing great. But yeah, Mr. Pryor shows up and we will be seeing more of him as we go along here, to include the very next scene where Carter is still trying to keep Michael alive, and Dad enters right as he loses his pulse. So great timing there, Dad. A+, 10 out of 10, no notes. We go over and check in with Sam, who gets home to Probots Shake Your Blood playing on TV loudly.
It's one of those like niche things that I know from like watching too many music videos in the early aughts. This was Lemmy from Motorhead.
Okay.
And I know Dave Grohl was in this, and I forget, there's a couple other people but it was a super group.
Okay.
From the early aughts.
Gotcha. Okay. Shake Your Blood. That is this like a take?
It's a good song.
Is this like a takeoff on the what was the Debbie Gibson song Shake Your Love from the 90s?
No, it was just a heavy metal song.
All right. And some random dude is sitting on the couch with Alex, and Steve is there as well. Steve said it was fine for Alex to skip school, hence why he didn't show up. And Steve appears to be high on pot, but he had a job interview, so clearly something worth celebrating. Like he went to one interview.
It's a smart plan to go to job interviews high.
Side note: now that weed is like more commonly legal in more places, I feel like it has been ages since I've heard anyone call it pot. Like I haven't heard anybody refer to it as pot in so long.
I always just hear it as weed.
Yeah, so. it's one of those things that like it was so ubiquitous, even just like 10 years ago, that it just sounds so strange and out of place to me now.
Legal pot doesn't have the same ring to it as legal weed,
or even legal marijuana, which is very clinical, but it still sounds better than legal pot.
Yes. Let's go to our first of three audio clips here today. Carrie's with her lawyer at the courthouse.
The judge will ask you questions about how you plan on caring for him while you're at work.
Meaning I'm somehow less of a parent if I have to hire a nanny.
Well, the Lopez's are retired.
They're elderly. They may not be alive long enough for Henry to get to high school.
And can offer a larger support system.
Well, so now I'm being penalized for not having a big family?
This is a conservative judge. Her idea of what represents the best interests of the family is pretty basic. Two parents, a man and a woman.
Unless she's planning to take away the children of every other single parent in Chicago and place them with a heterosexual couple, she's a damn hypocrite.
I don't disagree.
It's a myth, this idea that there's some perfect setting that everyone gets raised in.
You need to outline how you're going to provide a stable, consistent lifestyle.
They brought him.
Sit back down. If you interact, it could get volatile, and that's not going to help you in court.
He's grown.
Just okay.
Yeah. And see, this is yet another like example of like, I think I would have saved this court date stuff for this season premiere of next season. Like, I think I would have leaned more into Carrie helping Carter cope with his grief and like, I think there was more to be mined and more to be explored in that thread than continuing to elongate this thread that no one seems to really be enjoying. Like, it's not even...
No, I'm certainly not.
Yeah, it's not even making for terribly compelling television. I mean, it has its moment towards the end of the episode, and I say that very, very specifically in the singular. Like, it has its moment later before we're done. But overall, like, it just... It doesn't have the same kind of pizzazz and like it factor of the Reese custody battle stuff. Like that was a much more compelling legal case, whereas this just is kind of there and isn't really.
Yeah, it's more rushed than I remember.
Yeah, it's very rushed, which I'm finding with a lot of the plot threads from towards the end of this season. Like it feels like they're on some sort of artificial deadline where they just can't let any of this stuff bleed over into next season, which, yes, I know this bleeds over a little bit.
Maybe there's contract things behind the scenes that we don't know about, that it was unclear whether Carrie would be back for next season.
Right, it's entirely possible, but... it leaves a lot to be desired. So I think I would have rather seen her doing more stuff in the ER, kind of working with Carter. And she can still allude to a lot of this stuff, I'm dealing with this court case and like, I'm still trying to get over Sandy's death. And like, there was so much more to be dealt with there than doing this, which. speaking of. Steve, we go back over to Steve, who apparently wasn't planning on staying But stuff just fell into his lap, and so now he's going to get this cool job, and everything's going to be
great. Except for Sam. Sam is not in his lap.
Right, yeah. She's clearly not picking up what he's putting down here. He's leaving for Dallas for the time being to go get his furniture and such for his new place, which I think is like he's going to be like a building manager or building maintenance person.
Building maintenance, live-in maintenance guy.
Yeah, so that's his big gig. So he's going off to get his pick up his furniture and bring up a few things for his new place. And he goes off to leave. And this is the last time we will see Steve 1.0. That's it for Scary Steve. Next time we see Steve, when he returns, he will be Hillbilly Steve. And
I mean, Garrett Hedlund can be scary,
but not like this. Like,
that's
this,
true.
I would have liked to have seen this version of the character, all the way through, you know. I feel like because as awful as he is, he's good at being awful, which is a skill unto itself.
It definitely would have been interesting to see in next season's finale.
Right. Yeah, I would have.
Right. Is that?
I think so.
The heist.
I think so.
Or the breakout. Whatever.
I honestly can't remember, but yeah, the next time we see Steve, he will quite literally be a changed man. He will be a different person entirely the next time we see him.
Anyway, Mr. Gould's in a lot of pain though, but he wants to go to the bathroom. Him and Abby discuss how much time he has left, and we find out he taught algebra, and he's very sad he's going to die alone.
Mm.
Which, I mean, wouldn't anyone be right. Sad if they have to die alone?
37 years as a teacher, that I mean 37 years as anything is impressive, but especially as teachers, like I think I have a new appreciation or a greater appreciation at my age now of like what a weird, because like when you're a kid, time passes so differently that like every year feels like an eternity in school, you know. But for as an adult now, like seeing how quickly a year passes and how quickly kids grow up, like it must be such a mind fuck being a teacher, of just having like this whole new crop of kids every single year, that for you the faces change so quickly, but for the kids they feel like you're such this like integral part of their upbringing, like you're part of things for so much longer in their minds. I don't know, it's just one of these things I've been like thinking about recently.
It is weird to think about, because had I actually, you know, used my degree after I graduated, I would be in year 13,
right,
of teaching. So
wild. But yeah, we'll get more on Mr. Gould here as we go along. We go up to Linda's surgery, and it's not going well. She is a complete and total mess, as you might imagine. They're probably going to have to amputate her legs.
Not probably.
Gonna have to amputate her legs. And Michael is not doing much better. He's been coding on and off for 40 minutes. And Carter, through the haze here, kind of figures out that what's happening is that he has a tear in his airway. And once they correctly identify the problem, his sats start to rebound. And Pratt confers with Carter out in the hall. So Carter goes out into the hallway to let the father know kind of what's going on, and you know where things are better, but they're not completely fixed yet. And then he gets stopped by Pratt, who wants to chat with him about Jingmei's situation. So, and I think Pratt is pretty on the nose here, not on the nose, but on the money, thinking that it's probably her dad that is, you know, causing the black eye, and just.
It's not like she's been open to a relationship, so
right, yeah.
Otherwise, you would think Pratt would fit into that category,
right? Because I think that's Carter's first instinct is to ask if she's seeing anybody. So which Carter's hasn't been nearly as closely connected to Chen here recently as Pratt has. So
more of a legacy friend than an active friend,
yeah, exactly.
we go back to Antoine, who is likely facing 25 to life for his crimes due to it being his quote-unquote third strike. I'm not sure if this is still a thing with law enforcement where you have
three strikes, you're out.
If you have two, yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, like if you like have three missed felonies or something like that.
Yeah, it's
I don't know.
It's It's three felon, and it like everything else, it varies state by state. I'm pretty sure three strike laws definitely do still exist in some states. I don't know where Illinois lands on this. I know that the movie Barbershop which takes place in Chicago, has a big plot thread centered around third strikes. One of the characters in that movie, and generally speaking, I mean, yes, this situation here, I mean, given the kind of chaos and damage that Antoine has done here, I wouldn't necessarily say that the sentence that he's facing is completely unwarranted. But just as a general rule, those three strikes you're out type laws, I think, are regressive. Like, they don't leave a lot. Generally speaking, anything that's completely zero tolerance and leaves zero room for interpretation is not always great. So,
and Illinois does not have a three strike law, at least as of 2024, so when we're recording this.
Must have repealed it at some point, because they definitely did enough that it made it into a lot of Chicago based media from around the early 2000s.
Yeah, actually, fun fact: in December of 2023, the Prisoner Review Board in Illinois actually released the final Illinois citizen who was serving life because of the three strike law.
Hey.
So, yeah, but it used to be in Illinois where if a defendant is convicted more than three times of the same or similar offenses, the judge can aggregate the rulings into one that is eligible for a life sentence.
Yeah. So,
and obviously was hugely considered to be racist and draconian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said,
as you might imagine,
it just because it happens to be somewhat applicable in this case doesn't always mean that it was across the board. Like, it had a lot of unintended is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. It had a lot of unfortunate side effects as well.
Yeah. Anyway, but he's giving Pratt shit for being a doctor and quote unquote not looking back towards where he came from. And, you know, I mean, Pratt has a whole different life now. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's pretty much what he says. Anyway, Neil is smoking a cigarette on the side of the highway, which is a big old fucking mood. Sam is quickly packing up Alex and says, oh, they're moving. Alex calls her a bitch, though, and she yells at him about his dad being a shitty person.
I mean,
so I don't know if this will qualify for a shitty kids list mention.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a weird place emotionally. Like, he's,
yeah, and also with the suddenness of what she's doing and him probably being, this is not the first time this has happened.
Exactly.
Presumably.
No, it's absolutely not. And he's just, in his mind, you know, he's just getting a chance to like establish what he thinks is a real relationship with his dad, which I'm sure is at that age the thing he wants more than anything in the world. So it's you can totally understand why he reacts the way he does when Sam tells him that they have to leave. I feel like if there's any time this season to cut Alex some slack, it's probably now. But for now, we go up and check in with Linda once again, who has made it through surgery. Luca goes and chats with the husband and reveals the amputations.
Which is such a good reveal.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It is quite the flex. I assume there's some... I think it doesn't look like CGI, so I'm assuming they must have like some practical effects happening here where they must have cut some holes in the gurney or something to have her... You know,
have her legs under
hang
there.
Her legs down through the gurney and then wrap up the knees with gauze. But it looks fantastic. It looks so much better than the reveal of Romano's stump after
the weird CG.
The weird CG, like episode 3 Darth Vader CGI. Like it's oh boy, how far we've come. great reveal. Abby go down and check on Abby, who calls about her boards and finds out that apparently the results were mailed to the ER weeks ago and she should have known quite a while ago. So she's going to be on the hunt for that. We then get a guy coming in looking for Mr. Gould, and we find out that it's one of his old students, a guy who was with him in 1973 and 74. We find out that the guy has become a math teacher himself and now works at Mr. Gould's old school, which is very sweet, but a little on the nose. we're veering into after school special territory here. Our student slash teacher here is played by actor Alan Coleman, who appeared in stuff like Pump Up the Volume, Air Force One, and Seven.
All right, let's go to our second audio clip here. The judge is close to rendering a verdict in Carrie's custody hearing.
I've reviewed all the written testimony, and I have a few follow-up questions. Mr. and Mrs. Lopez, I understand you're both retired.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you describe your physical condition currently?
My wife and I are both in good health, Your Honor.
And a statement from your physician would verify this?
Yes.
Dr. Weaver, just to clarify, both your parents are deceased and you have no siblings?
That's correct, Your Honor.
I'll take this under submission and both parties will be notified of my decision when we...
Your Honor, I love my son.
Mr. Brooks, does your client wish to address the court?
No, Your Honor. She's,
And I love Sandy very much.
Carrie, please.
Together, we decided to have a baby. We chose a sperm donor, got pregnant, had a miscarriage, and together we tried it again. And that time, thank God we succeeded, and we had Henry. I was there when he was born. I cut his cord. We made our way through every cold, every rash, every colicky night. We fed our son and changed him and bathed him. We were a family, whether any city or state or country gives us that recognition. And we still are.
You'll be notified of my decision.
Oh, Carrie. I know it ultimately all works out, but Carrie.
Yeah. It's a good little speech, you know, and I just wish, as we were mentioning earlier in the episode, like, I just wish it meant more, you know, like, I wish it, I wish there was enough kind of foundational work done. It does feel like they're rushing this a little bit, and it's not that I want her to have this, like, completely, like, Oscar Beatty sort of moment where she's, like, you know, standing up in court and pounding on the desk and stuff, and, you know. Because it does feel like there's a light bit of flag planting here where they're like, actually, we're taking the stance that, you know, gay marriage should be legal and that, like, gay couples should have rights and things like that, which is a great stand to take. But they do it in the most kind of, like, wishy-washy, sort of, like, under their breath kind of way, where, yeah. Which is, like, you know, it's 2004. I get it. Like, we're not quite there yet. We're still a few years off of a lot of state-level challenges, and we're a full decade off of federal laws changing, but, like, I would have liked to have seen them, like, find their voice a little bit better and really, like, full-throated just be like, no, this is bullshit, like, and here's why. Because I feel like Carrie is a great vehicle to do that, not just because she's a gay woman, but because Laura Innes is such a powerful actress and, like, can pull that kind of emotion out when she needs to. And I just feel like it would have been nicer to see a more declarative, fully declarative statement of just, like, this is bullshit and here's why.
I also just think the whole thing is frustrating because when we've had in the past, we've had our filet mignon of court scenes with Benton and Roger and fighting over the adorable little baby Reese.
Right.
And it's frustrating because you could have, like, I honestly, even if they just would have gone back and done that thing, that whole court, like, storyline, beat for beat, would have been great.
Yeah.
Carrie could absolutely nail that. You sprinkle in some LGBT rights stuff in there, and you call it good. It just feels so rushed, and I hate it.
Yeah, it is. It's
I mean, I hate
rushed.
This. I hate that the storyline's even a thing. But, like, you could at least make it good. You could at least, like, let there be more room for better acting.
Right. If there's,
like, not saying Carrie's bad here, but, like, it feels forced and rushed.
Right.
And I love Laura Innes. She's a wonderful human being. But give her more to do.
Right, yeah. Give her if you're going to put a character through that much trauma, make it mean something ultimately. Like, give there a reason and, like, give there a, let there be a satisfactory moment that makes it all worth it, even if it's not really worth it, but, like, you know, gives the audience the satisfaction of seeing them kind of overcome it to some degree.
Give me Carrie on the stand.
Yeah.
Why is Carrie not on the stand answering questions?
Right. You know.
Like, why is this not... Ugh. Right.
I know. There's just so much more they could have done with this. And it does feel a little... As is, it feels a little bit like we have Benton and Reese at home. Like, it does feel like kind of a pale mm-hmm. imitation of... not no pun intended, a pale imitation of that custody storyline.
Do we ever get confirmation if I don't think we ever really need confirmation, but is Henry
biologically?
Yeah, biologically.
I don't think we do. I mean, I would assume that, you know, based on Sandy obviously would have been the provider of the egg, and then the sperm donor, I'm assuming, is anonymous. But based on the physical appearance of Henry, I mean, there's, you know, he ain't putting
a... He's lighter. Right. So he's, at the very least, he's probably mixed race.
Right. He's not putting all of the hot sauce on his food. Like, he might put a couple... He might put a few drops, but, like, he's...
No. He's putting the hot sauce on his food, but he's drinking Pepto-Bismol before. Right.
Like, he's not all the way there. But, yeah, like, it's just... There's a lot that's left to be desired from this whole storyline. I don't understand. And maybe you're right. Maybe there is some behind-the-scenes tidbit that I am just ignorant of that necessitated them to rush this, because it feels like...
But they don't even fully resolve it this season, though. That's the other frustrating part, right? Is like, clearly they had time. Right.
This bleeds over into next season ever so slightly. And from everything I've heard, again, not really... My ER muscle memory has fully, you know, kind of eroded by this point. So I'm kind of going into most things other than big, big moments kind of blind. And I've been told by you and several other people that the resolution to this is quite underwhelming. So, you know,
it renders the whole plot unnecessary.
We'll touch on that, I guess, in the season 11 premiere, but yeah, it just, not their best work. Could be better. Could be a lot better. But for now, we go back and check in with Alex, who makes an emergency call to Luca when Sam goes down to pack the car, and Sam catches him in the act of calling Luca, who I guess he wants Luca to come and talk her out of it, I guess.
Basically talk some sense into his mom.
Right. We see that Neela has made it up to U of M, which that was quick. What do we think that drive is from...
Let me go to Google. Let's consult Google Maps while you continue.
From downtown Chicago to the University of Michigan campus in Ann Arbor, I'm going to put the over-under on that at about 6 hours. I just feel like it's a little bit unreasonable to think, because she didn't leave like first thing in the morning. She left like midday, and also, as we know, stopped several times.
Yeah, I was going to say, so right now it is 8 o'clock at night as we're doing this, 8 o'clock Central Time, and it says it's approximately 3 hours and 49 minutes.
Okay, well.
So from here to Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And clearly midday traffic would be a little different.
Yeah, so you're probably looking at least 5 hours, depending on how many times she stops. Right. So upwards of 6 if she stops more.
Yeah, so
for longer.
It would at least be late afternoon, if not early evening, by the time she's getting there. And based on which, you know, I guess this episode does take place in May, so like daylight savings time has already kicked in.
Long days. I'm very happy the sun is out until 7 o'clock.
But it doesn't look like she is arriving there at twilight. It looks like she's arriving there middle of the day, like sun high in the sky, like, you know, beaten down. So it's you know, not to get too pedantic, but in the spirit of Lauren, who would certainly be pedantic and shitting on U of M right now.
Once again, go
but
green.
She hesitates before walking in. We will find out why here in just a bit. But we go back and check in with Michael, who made it through surgery as well. Carter's chatting with Dad in the post-op room, where they've got Linda and Michael kind of lined up side by side. And Linda wakes up and doesn't remember what happened, which, hoo boy... That's a conversation and a half right there. You have to break the news to your wife that her legs are missing.
How could you forget a conversation with the breathtaking Luka Kovac?
I had the most amazing dream about a hot Eastern European doctor. We then go in and check on Abby, who finds her board results in like this mail drawer that we are now being told is a thing that exists, but doesn't open them up just yet. Clearly is a little nervous. And then we go back to Neela, who's taken the tour of the campus with the other interns at her orientation. And then as the tour breaks off, she asks to speak to the head doc, which we'll hear from in just a bit.
What? We're outside of the ER and Abby passed her boards. Yay!
Oh, yeah.
Cool. She has a little celebration with Carter, who says he never doubted her.
Aww.
But then Neela has a chat with the head doc there, who's played by...
played by actor Bruce Jarchow?
Jarko,
who appeared in stuff like Ghost, Outbreak, and Big.
But she is withdrawing from the residency program, but she's not sure what she's going to do, what she'll do next. But I'll give you a hint. It involves a silly hat.
God, that feels like so... weird to think that we're coming up on that. It feels like it's too early for that.
I mean, I think that's pretty much like episode two or something of next season.
Oh yeah, I mean, you are absolutely right that that's where we're headed. But it just, you know, big picture timeline wise, it just feels too soon. Then we get find more of Mr. Gould's students dropping by. You know, very sweet moment. And we get this very little, like finger guns, point at the camera, wink kind of moment that, like, again, I feel like if this were season one, two, three, somewhere in there, this would be the end of the episode. Like, this would be the thing that, like, the music would swell at the end. And, like, this would be the thing that closes us out because, you know, clearly she's clearly helped Mr. Gould and, like, and he's clearly in higher spirits. And as she's handing off to the other nurse, he asks her, are you going to be my nurse tomorrow? And she's just gotten her board results. She knows that she's moving on and that she's done with nursing. She's going to be a doctor now. And she hits him with, no, but I'll be around. You can just ask for Dr. Lockhart. And like, so it's, boom. It's this total, like I said, like finger guns pointing at the camera, And like I said, that would totally be worthy of a finale ender in simpler times. But we're not in...
if this was a normal episode, but this is the season finale.
Right. Well, but even, like I said, though, you got to remember, go back to like season one, two, and three. Those season finales are tame. Like, they are not...
that's very true, yeah.
They're not... like, we don't really start doing the cliffhanger thing until season eight, like the lockdown finale. Like, that's really the first time. Fair. That's, well, I guess that's, was Rampage was a cliffhanger at the end of season,
I mean,
seven.
Sort of.
They don't really pay it off, but it was, yeah. But it was kind of presented as a cliffhanger.
I mean, it's presented as Mark doing a murder.
Right, but they sort of presented as a cliffhanger of like, ooh, tune in next time to find out what happens with this. And then they kind of, in the first 5 minutes of the next season, they kind of brush it under the rug, and it's like, oh, that actually was not that big of a deal. But really starting in earnest with season eight, that's when we start doing the cliffhanger thing. And this, again, like going back to what I said at the beginning of the episode, this feels like this merging of timelines where we're getting this like cool, wistful, hopeful ending where we're seeing Abby moving on to bigger and better things that in another era, this would be the thing that would tie it all up in a nice neat bow before next season. But you can't do that anymore. The television landscape has changed. You're not the big dog in the yard anymore. There's all this other shit going on. There's House, there's fucking Scrubs, there's all these other, and looming on the fucking horizon is a Shonda Rhimes shaped shadow, like that is that is gonna leech even more of your viewers in just like a few short months. So like, you have to end on a big dramatic note, and you can't get away with this shit anymore. So yeah, it's just it's interesting to watch these two things kind of play off of each other. But yeah, we then see Lucas showing up just as Sam is about to leave. Sam brushes him off and then speeds away with Alex, and we never saw either one of them again. Stay tuned for the Sam Taggart retrospective coming at you next week. We'll never talk about this character ever again. It was just a big old mistake, and she was just here as a guest star. She's off to join Don Cheadle and Alan Alda in the great middle length guest star arcs in the sky.
And also stay tuned for the Alex retrospective, which is just one giant fart noise.
It's just that it's just Lizzie's pen clicking over and over again for an hour. We'll definitely pick up on this next season. So get your posts ready, Facebook group. I'm dreading reading them as we speak. And then we go back over and check in with Chen and Pratt in the exposition closet, where she confides that her dad isn't himself anymore, and he hit her as she was trying to bathe him, hence the shiner she's been sporting all episode. And Pratt offers his support as a friend, which is good boy Pratt shit, see? With character development. This is why I hesitated to put him down as my my pick for least favorite of season 10. I figured he's had his moments this season of bad boy behavior, but ultimately, you know, we end up landing the plane.
Or Alex is right there. A brief scene of Antoine getting cuffed, and we say good riddance to that piece of shit who just couldn't sit in traffic. God, I hate this guy. But let's go to our final little bit here. Elgin hasn't been picked up, so we're going to go... let's go figure out what's up with that.
She should have been here by now, man. What time is it?
Just about 5.
What's up, Doc?
Did he get all his discharge instructions?
4 hours ago.
Can't get in touch with my mom. Phone ain't working or something.
So what, you need a ride? I got the Chrysler outside.
For real?
0 to 60 in 5.6 seconds.
Let's go. Yo, this is a nice ride, man. This is the best I've been in.
Hey, is your safety belt fastened?
Like this one right here? Want to turn up something?
Hands don't even have to leave the wheel.
Oh, how many speakers you got?
Hey, subwoofer, 380-watt digital amp.
Yeah, and you're going to blow them all out, not to mention our high-frequency hearing.
What you say?
The lady wants it down a notch. Is that better?
Thank you.
All right, keep the shirt on.
Road.
Hey, what's your problem, man? Why don't you get out of here?
Pay attention to this.
Oh, nice.
All right, we're out of here.
See you, suckers! I feel that heavy power, baby. Oh. It's a beautiful thing.
Woo! Okay, do you want to slow down now?
Woo!
Slow down.
There, everybody happy now?
Okay, good.
Son of a bitch!
She's shooting at us!
Get down!
Come on! Hold on!
We gotta get out of here!
Hold on!
Where is he?
We gotta get away from him!
The drama.
Right. You gotta have the drama. You gotta have the what's gonna bring them back.
The suspense. The Chen scream.
Right. I mean, you know.
It's a good scene.
Yeah.
I like it.
It does feel a little bit like Babby's first cliffhanger. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Which it's like, you should be kind of used to this by now. Like, you should know how to do this.
And to be fair, Lower Wacker Drive, where this is filmed, can be kind of hard to navigate. But there are exits.
There
are several ways out of there.
The Batman Street.
Where exactly? Where he could have gotten up to Lake Street, or if he had just kept speeding, he could have gotten out onto the highway.
Yeah, so I mean, it's really funny how your memory kind of shifts things around and like makes things puts things out of order and things. Because when I think about this moment and I think about this scene and I think about, you know, the ending or whatever, it's always, in my memories anyway, it was always Leon in the backseat and not Elgin.
I was never.
Like, in my head, like, in my, you know, when I remember these things, like, it was,
yeah.
Which obviously makes no sense because Leon's...
Maybe because I've seen it more, I
Leon's been gone for more than a season. So
come on, you got to distinguish your large black men who are associates of Pratt.
I guess so. Yeah. It's clearly because we would have, after Chen screams, we would have heard him yelling G afterwards.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
But yeah,
I'm so glad he's gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is certainly a way to end a season. It's one of the endings of all time, of ER. Okay. I guess maybe too, because I kind of know that like this ultimately doesn't matter that much. Like this isn't really that important, you know, like Chen's not long for the show at this point. Like it's not going to inform that much of Pratt's arc.
Yeah. So Pratt still has a few more seasons in him.
Right. And Elgin's kind of a big nothing burger, you know? So it's like the stakes, I guess, in hindsight, don't seem as high. But trying to put myself in the frame of mind of watching this as fresh, you know, 20 years ago, I guess it would have had me going, okay, I'll tune in next fall, you know, I'll figure out what happened, you know, just to, if yeah. nothing else, just to see how this pays off, even if I'm not going to stick with the show long term. But yeah, it overall, like just a really, like I think we said at the top, like a kind of weirdly quaint season finale, but one that I think at least from a analytical perspective, I appreciate because it is such a curiosity of like the merging of the two styles of season finale of like, we want to end on a positive note and we want to have something to be hopeful about going forward. But we also want to have the big dramatic reveal or the big dramatic moment that's going to like keep eyeballs, you know, glued to the screen going into next season. I guess I appreciate the effort of trying to thread the needle. I find it more interesting than I do good, I guess, is really where I land on it. Like it's interesting to think about and it's interesting to dissect, but it's not a particularly memorable episode in my opinion.
Yeah, it's solidly okay. Like there's nothing inherently like awful about it, but there's nothing inherently like amazing about right. it. So like I think it falls right into like the 7
yeah.
range for me.
There's definitely
was one of the ER finales of all right. time.
There is definitely much worse. There are much worse season finales out there, and certainly much better ones. Like this one would fall pretty squarely, I think, into the middle of the pack, if not lower middle. Like this is probably somewhere, if you were going to rank all 15 season finales, I think this one would probably come in somewhere around 8th or 9th. Like it's there, it exists, you know, watch yeah. it if you want to. There's nothing terribly objectionable about this episode. There's nothing, it's not like last week where I would be like, don't watch this if you have this particular kind of trauma. Like there's nothing,
yeah, there's nothing triggering in
right
here.
There's nothing inherently off-putting about it, but there's also nothing that it's like you need to watch this episode to appreciate anything else. Like there's
like, yo, my dude, she gets into a car chase at the end for 30 seconds.
Yeah, like it's I don't know, it's, there's so much of this episode too that feels kind of rehashed. Like it feels like we've done this before, you know, like
I guess
Abby's ascension to doctor feels kind of like a rehash of Carter's ascension to, you know, resident, and Carrie's thing feels like a rehash of Reese, and the car chase, and granted there wasn't gunplay involved, but the car accident thing at the end is kind of a little bit reminiscent of Luca and the med student. Like, and it's, you know, there's just a lot of stuff in here that's just like feels like we've been here and done this before, and like kind of to better effect. Like the this is like the store brand version of all these storylines, and that's not what you want out of your season finale.
Yeah.
But yeah,
but I mean, kind of a mid finale to kind of a mid season, which we'll talk about more next week on the wrap up.
Yes.
But
do you, before we get into the listener responses, do you want to address, after the wrap up plans for us?
Yes. Okay. So let me pull up the dates here and from our group chat to make sure I'm not lying to the listeners. So obviously, for like three of the last four episodes, we've been sans Lauren. And I don't know if it's shown, but I haven't had nearly as much energy to put into this. Daniel's been going through some stuff on his own and with his move and everything. And frankly, we're all just exhausted. Like, we love doing this. This is a labor of love, but it's kind of becoming a chore for us at this point, and it's losing that spark.
And before we get too deep into the weeds, I want to put everybody's fears to rest immediately and say that we're not stopping. We're not stopping. We're just
we are pressing pause.
Right, we're going to take for the first time. So now that we've finished covering the episode, we can actually say we have covered 10 full seasons of the show. Like we are
2/3 of the way through this. Right.
We're 2/3 of the way through. Fully. We started recording in September of 2019. It is now, as we sit here, late March of 2024, which means we've been at this nonstop every single week for about 4.5 years.
Never missed a Thursday,
and we've collectively kind of slowly come to the conclusion. I mean, we've talked about this on lounges. We've kind of teased it a little bit on social media at times. At one point we were talking about maybe doing a light format change in season 11. I think we've kind of decided not to do that for the time being. But
I think we've agreed that I think my notes are kind of the way we want to do it.
We've figured out a way forward, you know, but the most important thing is that we want to be able to do this, like, do it justice, and we want to be able to do it well and do it right. And a big part of
we want to love it.
Right. And a big part of that is doing that together. And Lauren is just not in a place to be able to do that at the moment. And
yeah, Lauren is not healthy. She, like I said, she's dealing with kidney stones. She's still dealing with a neck injury, and she has a UTI as well, which is making her extra layers of miserable.
She's had a lot of stuff on her plate recently, and
yeah,
we all have. But, like, you know, so I just want to get ahead of that and put everybody's fears to rest. We're not stopping. We are, as Lizzie said, we're putting a pause. We're taking an actual season break for the first time in 10 seasons.
Yes.
And we have all of the information and all of the dates that you want that will let you know when we're going to be picking up the thread. You will still get your season 10 wrap up next week. If you're a free feed listener, you'll still get your free feed preview of the first half of the wrap up. If you're a patron, you will still be getting the full wrap up. As scheduled,
and all of it's, I'm sure, going to be insanely energy that Jake brings to the table.
Jake has told us he's ordered props. We don't know if it'll actually arrive in time for recording. We don't even know what he has planned. So, you know, if you're on the Patreon side, you will still get that. And a special thing to the patrons, like, we're planning on doing still keeping up with all of our obligations as far as bonus content is concerned. And maybe this will even free up a little bit of space creatively and emotionally to do some long-awaited extra bonus stuff beyond just the obligated lounge. So
I personally have a soft target of doing the lounge. I want to do a movie review, and I want to potentially maybe do a flash forward.
Yeah, although there's not that much left to flash forward to.
Well, I have a specific episode I'm thinking of that I want to look at. So it's not sad.
All right,
I'll
take your word for it.
It's not midnight.
But yes, so Lizzie, take it away. What is the plan?
So the plan currently is to take 1 month, so 4 weeks, 4 Thursdays off. So 21 comes out.
This will be coming out, if you're listening to this on the day that it drops, it is coming out on March 28th, which means that your preview or your season 10 wrap-up will be coming out on April 4th.
Yeah, so which we are recording that this weekend.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so after the 4th, you're going to, from the 11th through the 2nd.
Yeah, and that's...
through May 2nd is when we're...
we will be off.
Going to be off.
So that means we'll be picking up and starting season 11 on Thursday, May 9th. So if you're one of those people who likes to listen as soon as the episode drops, circle that date on your calendar. Thursday, May 9th, season 11 drops.
Yes, we love you. We want, like Daniel said, we want to do this justice. But more specifically, we need to heal from all of the stress. Like this, like we love, I do enjoy doing this once I'm actually doing it, but it's for a while now, it's felt kind of like pulling teeth, getting me to get to this point, like where I sit down and record. And I hate that it feels that way. So I'm hoping with a month off to just do some fun shit on mic.
Yeah.
Just only do fun shit on mic for a month for our patrons. Patreon.com/Sentinel Tone Podcast. Hopefully that kind of reinvigorates us a little bit, and it'll help me give me time, because I'm still dealing with a lot of unprocessed trauma from last year with my mom passing away and other life events that just really threw me for a huge fucking loop. And then it feels like I just haven't had a break, and we need a break. So hopefully we'll come back to you refreshed. We will come back, though. Yeah. That is the thing I want to emphasize, that we will be back.
Yes.
We're just tired, yeah.
Yeah, so once again, season 11 starting Thursday, May the 9th. Please do join us next Thursday for the season 10 wrap-up, whether that be on the free side or on the Patreon side. We will still be having all sorts of fun with that, and we'll remind everybody at the end of that as well. Kind of reiterate the point, and I'll put something on all the social medias and all that stuff, so like you'll know that this is happening, and you'll know, and we'll still, it's not like we're gonna like not post anything for a month. We'll be around, but we just won't be releasing any new episodes until Thursday, May 9th.
So we just won't be taking the hours a week it takes to record.
Yeah,
to put one of these together.
It does take more than just the time it takes to record the damn thing. Like, you actually have to like do the homework, and I think that's the part that it's hard to find the time and the energy for these days, is the all the other stuff. The actual sitting down and talking about it, 10 out of 10, no notes. It's always a good time. You always feel better about it after the fact than you do going in, but it's finding the time to do all the other stuff and finding the bandwidth to do all the other stuff that has been challenging. So
thank you, that's a good term, to find the bandwidth to be able to do all this stuff. Yeah.
But we should read these listener responses here on the put a pin in the end of season 10 here. Starting first and foremost with @SimplySwooning. Okay, I'm going to try not to kill Lauren here. Daniel, I'm the one reading these. If there's a finale that is held together by the main medical storyline, it's this one. I'm going to ignore the fact that it's basically a rehash of Luca's storyline in Be Patient with a few tweaks, because I find it very compelling. Also, can someone tell Carter to go home? He's in no position to be working right now. I didn't remember Pratt being such a jerk this season, but his asking Carter to check on Chen because he's uncomfortable doing it really pissed me off. Like, he's grieving, you idiot. I have no words. I don't know. I feel like that's a little harsh on Pratt, but maybe. I don't know. I have no words for the whole Sam situation, so other than she should call the cops. There's a warrant for Steve somewhere, I'm sure. Give Laura Innes all the flowers for her performance, fighting for her son, and Abby finally passing her boards has to be the only moment of true happiness in this whole thing. The ending has a very strong shock value, but I think my problem is I remember it too well and therefore can't invest fully. As far as finales go, it's very middle of the road for me. Episode-wise, it's a 7.5. I think that's about where we landed. @username11 says, face acting awards for everyone. Pratt for hearing the DUI patient was saying about Pratt giving back. Pratt was right not to help that particular patient, but you could tell it was the catalyst for Pratt offering to take Elgin home. Spoiler, Elgin would have been better off waiting. Sam for everything Sam is going through, the fear, the anger, the relief that she has a window to get away, and the urgency to do it. There is so much brimming underneath this storyline, and Miss Cardellini brings it. Abby for the annoyed as fuck face she makes when Weaver calls her about the board scores. That look contrasted with Abby's phone voice was so on point I laughed out loud. I love everything about Abby and Mr. Gould. It would have been so easy to give that character her promotion and not look back. Instead, we get a lovely requiem for her nursing career. It's nice for the character, but also respectful of nurses in general. The ask for Dr. Lockhart is a little eye-rolly, but it's also not unearned. There are worse sins. A decent episode overall, but forgettable as a finale. I'm mixed on the cliffhanger. And last but certainly not least, At the Full-Time Dad says, in ER's outstanding run of season finales, this is the one that I point to as just being okay. It's just not a bad finale by any stretch. I love Luca reprising his role from Be Patient. I love the moment where Abby learns she's passed her boards and that moment she shared with Carter, as we're firmly in the friendship phase between the two that I enjoy. Neela driving all the way to Ann Arbor to quit her internship is a fitting conclusion to season 10 Neela, and Pratt having an adult conversation towards the end of the episode gives us a glimpse of the dynamic we'll see moving forward, moving towards Chen's imminent departure. I really love Carrie's monologue before the judge pleading to keep Henry. I only wish they had given us the conclusion in this episode. Instead, you have to wait 3 months and the decision falls flat and is deeply unsatisfying. You only have to wait 1 month. We will be back Thursday, May 7th. So you'll get that resolution in
Thursday, May 9th.
Excuse me. We're recording on this on Tuesday. So, but May 9th. So just 1 month there, Aaron, not three. I know what you're getting at, but I'm using this opportunity to reiterate the point that this is how you do it in the biz. Like, you drive the point home. Thursday, May 9th. The thing that really drags Drive down is our first taste of drama Sam. The harried, frantic, angered, and visceral decision to just pick up and leave rather than serve Steve with a restraining order or contact law enforcement to get him out really always grinds my gears. It's just so over the top, and the he's a user and a loser line belongs in the Louvre's exhibit of worst TV moments, but otherwise solid finale. Tell us how you really feel, Aaron.
That's a very how do you do, fellow kids kind of
it
line.
It is, but like, I mean, she's upset, like, and she's been basically like held hostage by this dude for the last month while he's like squatting in her home. Like,
and she's a poet and she didn't even know
right.
it.
I give her a little bit of slack, and not just because 14-year-old me had a crush on her.
Hey, you know, 35-year-old me has a crush on her. Hey. So it's fine. All right. So like we said, we really appreciate it. We appreciate it if you just make sure you keep following us. We are on Instagram, that we are at Saying the Tone Podcast, and we are on Facebook at facebook.com/Saying the Tone Podcast. We have the official Saying the Tone Community Facebook. And we also, maybe it's a good month to subscribe to our Patreon. Even if it's just for 1 month, you get access to all those backlog of episodes and all the weird shit that we did. You can see us going through our experimental phases.
You can see us processing a global pandemic in real time via shitpost bonus content.
Exactly. With book reports and other assorted oddities. Hey, you want real analysis on a court case? You can go back and listen to Jake's whole spiel on the Reese fight. But yeah, patreon.com/Saying the Tone Podcast. Only $5 a month gets you access to all of that. So like we said, even if it's only for 1 month, there are options available to you if you're starved for content. Remember, Thursday, May 9th is when we'll be back. I will put that in the episode description as well for this and for the season finale. Or this and the wrap up rather, because this is the season finale. Look, see, we're tired.
We're getting there.
Our theme music, as always, is brought to us by Andrew M. Edwards. And Daniel, where can folks find you at?
All the usual places. You know, I don't. At this point, this is episode 223, not including wrap ups, not including bonus content. This is just 223 regular ass episodes. And like we said, we've never missed a Thursday up until now. And so I'm just, this is uncharted waters for us, but I think we have a solid plan. I think we've taken the time to really consider all of our options. We've got all our I's dotted and T's crossed, so I'm looking forward to the future. So the folks can find me on Thursday, May 9th, right fucking here. That's where they'll
exactly.
find me.
Gotta figure out, we gotta fish some people out of the Chicago River. That's what we gotta do on May 9th.
Hey.
All right. We love you. We love you and appreciate your understanding. And we will see you next week for the season wrap-up.